This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonsla, and you couldn't hear a dump truck drive through a nitroglycerin plant. That and more after a word from our sponsors, Napa Auto Tech Training and Pico Technology. Napa Auto Tech's team of ASC Master Certified Instructors are conducting over 1,200 classes covering 28 automotive topics. To see a selection, go to NapaAutoTech.com for more details. Tired of guesswork in your auto diagnostics? Need to pinpoint faults quickly and accurately? PicoScope will turn your PC into a powerful diagnostic tool. See live waveforms from sensors, injectors, and ignition systems. See the problem? Solve it faster. Visit PicoAuto.com. That's PicoAuto.com. I think I got a few good questions in my sent to me via email and through Messenger that I think are worth discussing. You know, some of the questions scare me a little, but you know, what the heck? That's what we're here for. First question. And I guess it isn't just one. I get a few that center around or revolve around similar concept, same concept. And I'm just going to get right to the one that freaks me out the most. It's, what do I think is the most misunderstood concept in auto repair? I should skip it. I think a lot of the misconceptions, the fact that there's a misconception doesn't really matter. It's a subject I talk a lot about in a lot of different venues, podcasts, and otherwise, that it is a big struggle of mine to find the happy medium between accuracy and applicability. Knowing how something really works or what's really going on is great to a point. And sometimes it can get extremely convoluted or just so complex, it doesn't help anyone. There's just so many misconceptions, and some of them are amplified in the resources we go to. And I don't know, maybe not directly go to for the single purpose of educating ourselves, but they are resources to educate ourselves. Some of them are instructor-led training. Some of them are articles written in trade magazines or professional forums and whatnot. I don't know, like some of the misconceptions, some of the, I guess, misinformation, I don't think it's intentional. I don't think anyone's out to just pull the wool over anyone's eyes. At least I can't imagine that. Most of them are not going to lead anyone to any significant error other than you're going to fix something and think you fixed it for a reason that isn't true, yet it's fixed and nothing's fundamentally wrong with the way you fixed it and what you did. It's just, it's not really what's going on. And one of the most recent ones, I know I've talked about it before, so I don't want to just be a broken record on things, but it's, you know, catalytic converters, switch rate. We haven't used switch rate in a long time. And switch rates means they're counting the switches of the pre-oxygen sensor or lambda sensor and comparing it to the switches of the rear. It's fundamentally wrong. And yet the answer gets wildly complex. And I guess what breaks the argument is, or I should say at least what breaks the switch rate suspicion, is there's plenty of examples of vehicles out there where if you were to look at pre and post cat oxygen sensors on a scan tool or a scope, graphing them out, you would not be able to tell the difference between a good cat and a bad cat, that both will show what we might deem excessive switch, you know, post-cat oxygen sensor switches, and yet one or both or neither sets P0, 420, or 430. That by itself breaks the argument. It's over. However, even if everyone thought that, and ultimately, if you looked at it and saw what you deem to be excessive switches, and yet there is no P0, 420, or 430, are you still calling a bad cat? Are you still going to bolt a new catalytic converter on this car? Chances are no. Why would you? Therefore, it's still back to, are there any exhaust leaks? Is it in fuel control? Are the O2 sensors and or air fuel ratio sensors operating as they should be? Are they accurate? Are there any firmware updates? Is the mass airflow sensor or main, should we say load input, or honestly just, yeah, primarily the mass airflow sensor, but potentially the manifold absolute pressure, but really mass airflow, because the PCM or engine control module, whoever's in control of the cat monitor needs to know what the gas flow rate is. It needs to know what the feed gas rate is in mass, right? To properly calculate or interpret the algorithm for the monitor. If that's all good and there is a 420 or 430, it's getting a catalytic converter. I guess what to take from it is what's going on is more complex than what we're going to do with a scan tool or a lab scope in the bay. And that the manufacturers have picked an inexpensive way to monitor a catalytic converter using oxygen storage capacity, which ends up being fundamentally a horrible way to determine the conversion efficiency of a catalytic converter or even life of the catalytic converter. However, the better ways are far more expensive. They go with what they got. They already have oxygen sensors in the exhaust, and they can keep these things within, you know, 1.5 times the threshold, if you will, set by the EPA. They do a pretty darn good job considering. So all we can do is really verify that the PCM or ECM, whatever the control module in charge of the catalyst monitor, is getting the cleanest data it can get to make that determination. And then we trust the algorithm. It's very, very rare that the vast majority of us are going to encounter a situation where there is a monitor that is passing and the car is still failing. That means we would be running FTPs in our shops, which not a lot of us are doing. Other concepts, I guess, I don't know, I guess I'm sure everybody's expecting me to say that our idea of what a magnetic field is isn't really what it is. I suppose it's more of a description of a force than something of its own, a moving electric field or a moving current, if you will. Current flow creates the characteristic that we associate with magnetism. That can be explained through special relativity of all things. Why I say of all things is because at that level, we would think more in terms of quantum mechanics, quantum field theory, but special relativity explains it quite well. Essentially saying that we know that opposites attract, likes repel. If you have a moving charge, you create a mismatch. And because of that, that's why we get that feeling of that magnetic field. Does it really hurt anybody to think of a magnetic field as something of its own? No, not really. I don't know that I know of any situation where that would hurt any of us in the car repair world. An interesting one, again, I'm not sure how it helps or hurts anyone, is energy in a circuit on a car doesn't come from the battery or the alternator. It comes from the electric field, which gets really convoluted. But you guys asked me what I thought was a misconception. That is one. Battery and or alternator puts energy into the electric field, and then the component using that energy, if you will, gets it from the field. It's fascinating in that that's how our universe works. I mean, that's to me the most fascinating thing. That's how the universe works. What we think, how we perceive something isn't true. And there's a lot of situations, a lot of scenarios where we embrace that, and then others where we reject it. And I just find it fascinating that that is, as best we can tell, that is how things work. Fly, it's counterintuitive. It doesn't make sense. And yet that's what it does. I think it's awesome. And it's never helped me fix a freaking thing. So there you go. Yeah. So those are some concepts. And I think there's so many though. We could just keep rolling with just theoretical stuff. How stuff works, how I think even just economics, if you want to get into more management type things, psychology, it would be really cool. And I think that's going to happen sooner rather than later, to have a kind of a call-in show, if you will, with Margaret Light. There's so many great conversations to have about what makes us who we are, what we are, how we act, how we behave, how others behave. Yeah, that understanding can increase compassion. So I really look forward to doing that. As for like the electrical stuff, I am hoping sooner rather than later to have a class put together with Pedro de la Torre on electricity. And the field thing is something I wrestle with because it is so cool. And yet, if somebody's in that class, do they really care? Meaning, I think there's a really neat experiment that could be set up to prove that energy doesn't flow through the wires, and that I could show that through a certain distance of wire and some mathematics, that for the energy to reach that bulb coming from the power source itself would exceed the speed of light, which is forbidden. It is forbidden in physics. I think I can prove that. Therefore, that would show energy is coming from the fields, and the field distance would be much shorter than the conductor distance, if that makes sense. So this is the stuff I wrestle with, and there's a real neat factor to it. And then what is the applicability of that? Yeah. Next one. A couple of things about the EGR episode. That some of the resources a couple of listeners have wrote about don't mention so much the thermal efficiency gained by the slowing of the flame front propagation. I didn't mean to at least convey that that was the primary reason we have EGR, just that along with throttling losses or suction throttling losses, that's one of the big gains in efficiency, that the engine doesn't have to work against itself. Like, you know, some of the energy content stuff aside with diesels, one of the big reasons that they have higher efficiency ratings is they don't really have throttles. A lot of them will add a throttle for EGR of all things, but where they want to create a little bit of vacuum. Otherwise, they don't really work against vacuum. And that's creates an inefficiency in a gasoline engine where it has to work against vacuum. And therefore, with EGR or the EGR effect, be it a valve or cam timing, allowing that throttle to open up further, if not all the way, eliminating or drastically reducing throttling losses, that is a big gain in efficiency. However, another gain is the fact of the flame front speed dropping. Flame front propagation speed drops. Therefore, we would have lower peak combustion pressure / temperature, but it would remain higher, or it would push down on the piston for a longer period of time. In certain cases, certain engines make use of that. Atkinson cycle and Miller cycle are the two that come to mind. They take advantage of trying to extend the power stroke, but they do that by shortening really other strokes, the intake stroke. We can make use of that by slowing down and having that pressure on the piston push down longer, even though we have lower peak combustion pressures. So yes, there's less power, but you don't need a lot of power going down. You know, at steady state, generally, we don't need a lot of horsepower. Therefore, by extending that out and reduced pressure, and because we're consuming less fuel, that slower burn helps with increased efficiency, primarily thermal efficiency. So yeah, even if it makes up what's significant when you're talking about large fleets, you know, if it's 1%, that may seem insignificant until it's spread across a large fleet of vehicles. And now it makes a big difference for CAFE standards as well as emissions. I guess concerned that that maybe was a misconception on or poor communication on my part.
NAPA Auto Tech training sessions are being conducted day and night in a town near you. This training caters to every level within your organization, be it a mechanical assistant, a mechanical specialist, a technology specialist, or a driver safety calibration specialist. Imagine a one-stop shop training partner in NAPA Auto Tech that will lead your team to a path to greatness. Auto Tech's entry-level Build a Tech classes convert the untapped potential of your new hires into money-making mechanical specialists. Autotech's higher level tech update classes introduce specialists to the world of ever-changing technologies, which prevents your shop from getting technologically stagnant. Remember, if you're not moving forward, you're falling behind. And turning to the front of the store, the Autotech Service Advisor class is an awesome way to hone your client advocate skill set, ultimately benefiting the customer through an improved vehicle repair experience. But it doesn't stop there. Imagine an electric vehicle class that takes your specialist well past the mundane, yet necessary safety topics. Well, it's here. Autotech's EV Ready Training is a week-long curriculum that takes participants through a hands-on experience involving hybrids and electric vehicles. The session kicks off with the use of PPE and proper tooling while touching on required OSHA regulations. Then, the students dive into the lab vehicles to gain knowledge of the common high-voltage components on EV and hybrid vehicles and their function. Attendees will be taken on a path exposing them to different electric vehicle manufacturers to compare component form and location. Additionally, information about Level 1 and Level 2 charging systems will be included, along with a quick look at DC to DC charging. The operation and maintenance of subsystems are explored, including the different modes of Tesla operations, and so much more. So what are you waiting for? Commit to taking your business to the next level with NAPA Autotech Training. Is your shop ready for the electric vehicle revolution? Don't get left behind. The Picoscope EV Kit is your all-in-one solution. Diagnose any electric or hybrid vehicle, from high-voltage batteries to complex communication systems. With guided tests and pinpoint accuracy, you'll tackle more jobs and boost your bottom line. This isn't just a tool. It's your future. Be the expert in EV repair. Visit PicoAuto.com to future-proof your shop today. That's PicoAuto.com.
Another one. This was thoughtful. How is your dad? It's quite a few of those. So thank you. I appreciate that. And it's a little over 2 years to the day, honestly, that as best anybody could tell, it was sudden cardiac arrest. There's an episode on it. It's timing of things is amazing, but he's healthy. His doctor visits are maybe every 6 months now. He has a implanted defibrillator. It has not had to hit him once. So it monitors his, of course, heart rate. But if he would get into, we'll just say out of sync, I don't think they're necessarily looking for like AFib, maybe a significant enough tachycardia. But really, they're just watching that if he would get, you know, significantly out of sync, or maybe you would suffer. And I think I probably should have looked this up, but it's kind of an electrical storm of his heart. This will intervene and get him back into sinus rhythm. It has not had to do any such thing. It hasn't had to restart his heart, and it hasn't had to make any corrections. So crazy, right? It's just mind-blowingly crazy that. And honestly, from Thanksgiving, we have a very similar situation with everything's fine until it isn't. Things are going well. Dad seems very healthy. And I, you know, appreciate every second, right? Because you just don't know. Wouldn't even have to be like you specifically, just somebody you know. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe hug someone a little harder or shake their hand a little harder. I don't know. But yeah, and not that we have to always be so morbid or overly, I don't know what's overly, but not that every parting of ways or, you know, seeing somebody has to be so emotional. But yeah, I don't think it would hurt to consider any time could be the last time. You're only going to see so many summers. You may not know how many that number is, but you're only going to see so many sunrises. You're only going to see a certain person so many times. You don't know what that number is. It could be a lot, could be a few. So yeah, it's so easy to say and hard to do. And if everybody isn't on the same page, it could come off weird. So do with that what you will. I just try to take a beat and appreciate time, appreciate friendships, family, stuff like that. And try not to spend over too much time appreciating, because luckily I think I have a lot of reasons to be very appreciative. It makes sense. I haven't talked about her for a while for health-wise. How is Danielle? She might be back 100% with her lungs. there's other health concerns that I don't know that I've talked a whole lot about. I don't know how much they're worth getting into other than it might make a really, really interesting episode. Little to do with auto repair, 100% to do with life and us. There's an interesting concept. I haven't talked a ton about it because I think the jury's out a little bit. So I have to find more data backing it up or debunking it. But if I remember right, there's a book called The Body Keeps the Score. If that's true, it would be a very interesting conversation to have. But lung-wise, COVID pneumonia recovery and all that, dare I say 100%. I don't know that I've seen her really struggle. A couple times this fall and early winter, I think kind of allergy-driven or sensitivity-driven. But other than that, I think she's made a full recovery. And wow, there's other people that's far longer. So I guess I'm not looking to, not in the an Olympics of who suffered longer or worse, just that it knocked her down for quite a while. I mean, the better part of 2 years, really, to get back to not even feeling normal, but feeling like, okay, I could live like this. I wouldn't have a terrible time dealing with this. It sucks. I wish I was normal, but this is doable, or it wouldn't be so bad. And then getting past that and just, I think, realizing even after the fact, like, wow, you know, I walked all around the mall and upstairs and all that, and I didn't even think about it. So that's a big deal, right? To feel normal enough to not even notice. That's kind of cool. Yeah, I really appreciate that. Really appreciate those questions. And I don't know, should I do one more? I get a lot of neat questions that aren't really automotive related. And not that I guess every single one of the last two aren't automotive related, but they've been subjects of the podcast quite a bit. Yeah. How about, it's Christmas time, so I got a couple of them. What's your favorite Christmas movie? I don't know. I like Christmas movies. It's probably Christmas movies and Christmas music. And they're probably guilty pleasures. I don't know. I guess I don't feel that guilty about it. I like movies in general, and I guess I just remember as a kid that feeling, that magical feeling, if you will. It's just a great time of year. For the most part, I love being in Minnesota for it when we have snow on the ground. So we have snow on the ground. There's been a couple of years lately, brown Christmases suck. And also just, you know, from a business standpoint, snow helps. Snow and cold, they break cars. You know, car accidents go up. That's more ADAS calibrations and module programmings and wiring harness repairs, stuff like that. For, you know, the cold just doesn't throw heat like I think it should, right? So those help. And it just pushes things over the edge, right? Batteries that were just getting by, can't get by anymore. Stuff like that. But gosh, favorite Christmas movie. That's so brutal. I guess I could start a real crap storm. No, I don't think Die Hard's a Christmas movie. I also don't think It's a Wonderful Life is a Christmas movie, although we watch it every Christmas. So same with Die Hard. But I just don't think of them as Christmas movies. They happen during Christmas. Oh, man. I really, really like A Christmas Story. It's before my time, at least what the setting is before my time. It's more what my dad's childhood would be, or my parents, really. There's certain elements of nostalgia that resonate. That's way up there. 8-bit Christmas. That's set when I was a child. So that one hits home. Those are two big ones. I like Elf. Scrooged. I'd like Scrooged. There's also a version of A Christmas Carol with Patrick Stewart made specifically, I think, for TNT, but it might be my favorite version made for TV. Those are my favorites. I would really struggle between A Christmas Story and 8-Bit Christmas. Those are just, they're up there. I really like them. Another movie question. It's intriguing to me. I answer these questions via email. You know, I respond. I guess it's kind of cool, and it's in an interest wheelhouse of mine. Oh, here we go. What movie plot line frustrates you the most? There's a lot, actually. But the one that probably had me the most frustrated, I got to level with you, is how Thor's character from Ragnarok to Endgame was handled. Frustrates me to no end. Specifically in Endgame, when they did Fat Thor. That drives me insane. The fact that he got fat, I don't care. What kills me is that his friends don't act like friends. Like, they make fun of him. Clearly, he is suffering from some pretty major PTSD. That character has lost his mom, his dad. He thinks his brother, and I guess honestly lost him. He had a chance to kill Thanos. Didn't go for the head. Thanos gets to snap, wiping out half the universe. That's a lot of weight to carry, and I don't know how anybody would handle it healthy. So he handles it the way he handled it, which was pretty much barricade himself and play Fortnite and drink and let himself go, if you will. And his friends do jack to talk to him and help him and be there for him. They run him into the ground. It's made to be comedic. And I'm okay with comedy. I'm okay with comedy with sensitive or serious topics. But there is a point where you're making fun of them. And then at some point you're going like, my friend is suffering. He's suffering. And then he kind of goes to Asgard, right? To ultimately they're trying to retrieve a stone. If I remember right, it's the Reality Stone. I could be wrong. I think it's the Reality Stone. And he runs into his mom and also calls for Mjolnir. And Mjolnir comes to him and he's relieved he's still worthy. I'm not saying he should have slimmed way down then immediately. And it was a bit of a surprise attack, don't get me wrong. But he went up against Thanos with all the Infinity Stones, lands a, could have been a lethal blow. And then they like nerfed him. And now he struggled to fight Thanos without the Infinity Gauntlet, without any of the stones. It would have made far, far, far more sense to have Thor giving Thanos all he can handle. Like, Thor is going to mop the floor with Thanos, and the Black Order would have had to come in and try to save Thanos from Thor. And now Thanos with the Black Order is too much. And then you have the other two, Captain America and Iron Man, to help try to even it out. Instead, it's the non-Infinity Gauntlet armed or Infinity Stone armed or possessing Thanos hanging with Iron Man, Captain America. And according to the directors and screenwriters, an as powerful or most powerful version of Thor. It doesn't add up. So maybe you could tell I was a little frustrated with that. I don't know. Maybe I should go back and re-record this and tell you what I really think. All right. So back to cars. The future of EVs, purely EV, I just don't know that they can overcome the energy density issue. It seems like I've read a paper where there is, based on the mass, there's only so much energy that can be contained in a battery. Almost like solar panels, right? It's the square footage or square meters, if we want to sound cool. Or for our Canadian friends, you're welcome, Jeff. There's only so much energy in sunlight. As efficient as you make a solar panel, it's only going to be able to get so much energy from a certain area. It's just the way it is. And the same with the batteries is the energy density versus chemical storage, gasoline, diesel, stuff like that. It gets rough. So hybrid still seems the way, and hydrogen might end up being difficult for anybody to combat. Not that they should. I mean, I'm just saying, like, that could end up being far more reasonable than just pure EV. I could be wrong. I don't know. I know that sounded like I have it together on that, but I don't. As far as I can tell at this point in time, from what I've read, and I've not dedicated a whole lot of time to it, is that there's an energy density issue and batteries are going to suffer. However, for a lot of us as a daily driver, in my world, an EV would be perfect, I don't know, 99% of the time. So yeah, maybe that alone is enough to drive them dominating the market. A lot of times we still buy stuff for that 1% of the time, you know, when we're going to go on a long trip. A lot of people drive pickup trucks every day. They don't need it, but that's their daily driver because sometimes they need to pull a boat, pull a camper, move stuff, you know, so, and we don't all have 10 car garages. I don't, we don't have the perfect vehicle for every situation. I think I'll call it. I really appreciate listening. Still going to have episodes before the end of the year, but this one will be released pretty darn close to Christmas. So Merry Christmas to all of you. Hope you got a kick out of this. Let me know, you know, email me or message me about content because I like talking about everything. And, you know, the vehicle technology and stuff is a passion, but so is so many other things that I think can intertwine or do intertwine. But I'm curious as to the rant about Thor or the, you know, really out there non-automotive. Take it or leave it. Let me know what you think. More or less, some, you know, try to find a happy balance. I look forward to that. Keep sending the emails with questions. I like to research them and help where I can. And yeah, I just try to see if we can't minimize or eliminate more and more misconceptions. So yeah, really like to thank our sponsors, Napa Auto Tech Training and Pico Technology. And thank the Automotive Repair Podcast Network for making this all possible. I know I mentioned it last time. I think it's important to mention again that there's an app, the Automotive Repair Podcast Network app. It's pretty slick. I got to level with you. They put a lot of time and effort into it, and you can see it. Yeah, check it out. Let me know what you think of it. I hope everyone has a safe and happy holiday. And until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z with Matt Bonslow on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Want Matt to cover a specific topic? Check the show notes for his email. Your input matters.